Welcome to BDO To Go, casual industry conversation brought to you by the restaurant industry professionals at BDO. The constantly evolving landscape of the industry forces operators and owners to adapt quickly and maintain a keen awareness of consumer and economic shifts. Understanding these business impacts and insights is key to the continued success and resilience of the restaurant industry. That's why we crafted our new BDO To Go podcast series, a monthly podcast that you can take to go.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us today for another episode of BDO To Go, our podcast dedicated to exploring industry trends, best practices, and all things restaurants. My name is Meg Potts, co-lead of BDO's National Restaurant Industry Group. As we all know, restaurants continue to battle economic issues from rising food costs, staffing challenges, and wage pressures, alongside guest traffic changes and a pullback in consumer spending. At the same time, there's a great deal of uncertainty surrounding regulations and policies and the potential impact on the industry. Today, we're joined by Aaron Frazier to unpack some of these potential policy changes. Aaron is the Vice President of Public Policy at the National Restaurant Association in Washington, D.C. In this role, Aaron oversees restaurant industry policy priorities and issues such as tax relief and healthcare. He has been a frequent speaker and guest at BDO's annual restaurant CFO Bootcamp, and I'm honored to have him join us today. Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Meg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's crazy to think that it's already the fourth quarter. And if I think back to the beginning of the year, I sat down with Jay Duke of BDO to discuss franchising trends and the sense of optimism that we were feeling as we headed into 2025. And as we wrap up the third quarter, I would say it's definitely been a mixed year. What do you think?
I think you're spot on with that. I think the economy has been both resilient and then also showing some you know, lights going on in the dashboard of concern. I think that prices of input goods and food and beverage have been stubbornly high, and that's been challenging. Labor costs are still up 30% over pre-pandemic levels. So there's definitely some challenges there, but I think, you know, in terms of the resiliency of the restaurant customer, people still love going out to eat. They still want to prioritize, celebrating at a restaurant, special occasions at a restaurant, and even just baking into their daily model of, I need to get lunch and I'm not going to make 21 meals a week. And I have great restaurant ready food, at the touch of a button or with family and friends sitting down. So I think it's been both a tale of headwinds and tailwinds, but the customer and the economy are still resilient.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's been pleasant to see that sales are climbing back up for the industry overall. And we're actually seeing a little bit of traction with guest traffic as well, which has been a little bit of one of those hard to find elements where you continually to see the sales increases with our guests lagging behind. But those numbers are improving right now. So combine that with the access to capital starting to improve as well. It feels like optimism's returning a little bit as we wrap up 2025.
Yeah, I think the Federal Reserve beginning to dial back interest rates is going to be extremely helpful. I mean, you mentioned access to capital, which is just for any restaurant brand looking to add another location, new unit growth, improve average unit sales. I mean, that's a really big issue for them to get access to capital that doesn't have those interest rates that are going to be really starving them in their growth trajectory. But I would say overall, with restaurant sales being high, there's that other component of it of, okay, sales are higher, but margins are always facing compression. And that's an issue that a lot of people have been very laser-like focused. How do we both provide value to the customer, but also make sure that there's going to be some margin at the end of the day?
Absolutely. You know, restaurants continually operate on those razor-thin margins. It feels like they get thinner and thinner each year as we go forward. But of course, sales improving always makes everyone feel a little more optimistic. Sales can hide a lot of sins, but they can just make you feel a little better about the day ahead. And when you mentioned that that guests are still prioritizing restaurants, and they still want to go out and sit down and celebrate. It's also been really interesting to watch the continued evolution of how guests use our restaurants, with off-premise sales continuing to grow. If we dial back 5 years ago, it was, is third party going to stay? Are they cannibalizing our guests? And I think we can all agree that it's here to stay in some aspect, and that it's helping to grow our sales for the most part across the industry. And when you and I sat down and talked a little bit, you mentioned the data privacy bill that's coming through. And it really struck me on what kind of impact it could have potentially on off-premise sales as well, along with just online orders and how we use our information.
Absolutely. So we've been working on data privacy issues for the last 3 to 4 years, with the exponential increase in third-party delivery sales, offsite sales, mobile apps becoming an essential part of a restaurant growth trajectory. One of my favorite coffee places in Maryland and Delaware area has about 10 locations, and they launched an app with a loyalty program, and it's very good. So this is not a large, medium, small. It's in everything. Every restaurant now is looking at how do they improve their mobile app experience. But there have been a lot of concerns with data privacy. Now, generally, this isn't a restaurant company going in there and scraping your data and knowing where you are and your historic buying patterns. It's a lot of different other companies that do that. But nonetheless, we get kind of enraptured in the data privacy debate. Generally, we have a three-pillar stance on data privacy standards. Number one, you have to protect customer loyalty programs. These run at the heart. I mean, you and I grew up having punch cards where you had your favorite Froyo place, your favorite pizza place would track your sales and reward you for loyalty. Now that's all done digitally. So anything that we have for a data privacy standard needs to protect that customer loyalty program. The other is a preemption. Some states, California, looking at you, do have already have a data privacy standard. And the last thing that you want to do is, if you're working, on a national pattern of growth for your brand, or you have franchisees in different states, is having to harmonize different state-by-state standards that increase costs and ultimately frustrate customers because they have to do different opt-in, opt-outs, cookies every single time they open up an app, which just makes it less relevant. And the third real big priority for us would be a private right of action to make sure that these mobile apps and the data privacy effort doesn't become a new ADA lawsuit on websites. So those are our three big pillars for a data privacy standard. We don't think the federal legislation met that standard last year, but we're very excited that the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House and the Senate Commerce Committee in the Senate, they've said, let's listen, let's work on a standard that can work for business, work for consumer rights advocates, work for making sure that kids are safe, and let's ensure that it's harmonized in a bill before we kind of release a big tax. So we're very hopeful that we're going to see something in this space by the end of the year. Even just today, it was previewed that in Q4 of 2025, we're going to see some new text.
Interesting. So that consumer consent part, I think, is really intriguing and important, as you highlighted, as you go forward. Just as we were getting on this meeting, obviously you have to consent to being recorded. You have to consent to allow us to take notes on this meeting. However, there are other systems out there where they come right in. I continually see note takers join us in meetings. They're not asking my consent, but they're taking notes on what I'm saying. So I think that's something that we obviously have to navigate, and hearing that this is going to be an upcoming 2025 issue
It's moving
is
fast, Meg. I
intriguing.
mean, if we think about the standard, I mean, this all started with Cambridge Analytica and the Brexit reform vote. And how they were harnessing data by different populations, and how they were communicating with people on their phones without permission, without that level of access granted. And now, with artificial intelligence being baked into a lot of different restaurant models in terms of the drive-through or the phone or ordering patterns and limited time offers, things are moving quick. So it's important to have a framework that's going to allow not only technology to improve operations.
Absolutely. And That goes hand in hand with how the information is being harnessed by restaurant and retail groups as well. Obviously, we know they're using it to tailor advertising towards our preferences, really trying to help make that unique experience for each of us as we come through the door, not only to encourage us very strongly to come back more often, but to try to make our experience even better when we're there. So it's important to hear that there's some carve-outs as well to protect that data collection at the same time.
Right. We love restaurants. We love thinking about restaurants, but sometimes we get involved in things. We're like, wait, we have to scenario plan this because then we have to look through all the other dimensions because we are on Main Street as a bricks and mortar store. We're not the same level of tech, Silicon Valley. We're thinking about the next AI model and robotics where we're a little bit more conventional and we're proud of that. But when we do have our hand in technology, it needs to be efficient and it needs to be customer facing.
So if we use that and we pivot kind of into a next element to talk about that you're working on, that's probably near and dear to all of our hearts in the industry, would be credit card swipe fees. Total big impact on the restaurant financial statements right now, how it has been for a while. It continues to grow. But then it's been interesting to see the number of restaurants growing that are starting to add a fee if you pay by credit card, which also goes into the surcharge area. So I'd love any sort of update that you can share on that element.
Yeah, it always surprises me when we talk to lawmakers and we say that if we did something like a Credit Card Competition Act, which only adds a new lane, a new payment road for banks to process a payment, that would be such a big deal because currently swipe fees alone cost U.S. businesses $187 billion. It's an inflationary figure. The margins, and we salute good margins because we wish we had more in restaurants, of the two big credit card companies are around 50 and 60%. This is all public record. So for us, it's very interesting to see that if we have a solution that simply adds a new payment lane, it could save $16 billion a year. So we are always skeptical when we hear that companies can't do things, that big credit card companies can't do things. Unless consumers would be adversely impacted on their security, they would lose all their access to rewards points, they would lose access to credit altogether. Except in other countries where they actually have a cap on credit card fees, they don't lose access to customer rewards programs. They don't lose access to credit. So it's one of those things that we've been talking about the Credit Card Competition Act at our annual public affairs conference every year for the last 3 years. We're going to do it again this coming year. We are trying to change minds and change hearts on Capitol Hill, but there are some other things we're working on to make sure that we can address the not only the amount of the fees, but the amount of fees themselves, because there are new added fees on top of the existing fees, and trying to curb those practices.
And this is definitely one of those areas that continue to impact those razor-thin margins that we talked about, especially as we continue to see off-premise sales grow, which can only be paid for via credit card. So the amount of cash that's actually taking place is, reducing greatly.
And one of the other things that we're trying to do, Illinois at the end of 2023 passed something called an interchange fee legislation and came into law. It's currently working its way through the courts. But what it does, it said that, okay, credit card companies that are processing a transaction, okay, we understand that you can process a fee on the transaction cost. But now you're adding the credit card fee on top of the sales tax that's being remitted to the state of Illinois. That's not what the fee is for. That tax is just for Illinois. It's not for the credit card company to add the fee on top of that. Same thing with a tip. A tip by federal labor law says the tip goes right to the employee, end of story. It goes right to the employee that worked that table or the tip pool for all the people that are working in that tip pool for that shift. You don't get to pay a fee on top of the tip that goes to the employee. That's different than what the credit card company agreement is for. So last year we had about a dozen states that seriously considered interchange fee legislation. Again, Illinois is looking in the right direction through the courts, but we're looking for a favorable settlement in Q4 2025. So keep an ear out for that. But we're going to be back on state house, back on state houses in the first quarter of 2026, talking about the different interchange fees that are being added onto sales tax, that are being added onto tips for the worker, and making sure that more and more state lawmakers are aware that they can do something about this, and they can do something about it quick, because there is good precedent.
And that seems like another element that could really benefit from one federal standard, where companies don't have to navigate differences across states if they're if they're operating in multiple states.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's one of those things that if you create enough headaches in the states, you're going to look for a national solution. So I think you put together the puzzle pieces of our strategy there, saying like, well, if we can't get it done federally, maybe we can create enough changes in the states that they'll soon enough be clamoring for a federal standard that actually adds a new payment pathway, just like we have for automatic clearinghouse payments or debit cards that are a lot less lucrative for the big banks because they have some options there.
Yeah. So, Aaron, I know that these couple of areas that we talked about are just a few of the numerous things that you're working on right now. What else is on the horizon right now?
Yeah, we had the pro-growth tax measure signed into law in July, and I remember being very, very excited going to 4th of July weekend because it was done, we're going to get full expensing, we kept the corporate rate of 21%, and we have other things that are going to really spur growth, like 20% permanent qualified business income deduction for pass-through businesses. On one of my first calls when I was talking to people about what was passed, it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do about tariffs? What are you going to do about the supply chain? And it's just, my shoulders just kind of sank. I was like, yeah, you're right. There's that margin compression. So USMCA, people might know it's the artist formerly known as NAFTA. So USMCA is that trade agreement for Canada and Mexico. The reason why restaurants haven't been as affected as some other industries due to tariffs is because we import, we grow a lot domestically of the food that is served in restaurants, and then we import produce from Mexico, and we import potatoes, cattle, a lot of meat from Canada. If we had to, and we had a USMCA exemption on food and beverage products from Canada and Mexico in effect all year, since at the beginning, President Trump was saying 20% tariffs for Canada and Mexico. That eventually went away, and they said, well, it didn't go away for everyone, but it went away for food and beverage from Canada and Mexico. Big deal. However, there's always a but. In Q4, we're submitting comments to the U.S. Trade Representative talking about USMCA changes. They want to renegotiate everything in 2026. Officially, it's called a revisiting the treaty in case they want to change anything. The administration has made very clearly they want to renegotiate everything. This is everything from digital services. Canada has a tax on digital services that's being worked out, to everything else that might be under the supply chain umbrella. So that's a big deal. We're going to be commenting on that, working with lawmakers on a treaty. It's an actual treaty that has to pass the Senate and be signed by the president. So we are very mindful of how much that could change the chessboard for restaurants that are getting food products from both of those countries. And then we're watching really closely what's going on in the beef market in Australia, beef from Brazil. This is all part of a supply chain ecosystem that we are very sensitive to. And we're watching for growing patterns and all the other things that could change in restaurants. I mean, just this week, there was a social media post talking about furniture needs to be made in North Carolina. The outside world has stolen this furniture market. Like, we buy a lot of furniture in restaurants. And so all these things, again, are interrelated. So we're working with the administration. We're meeting with the right people. But the feedback from our members is really the best in terms of being able to share with us how pricing has adjusted, how things are evolving, what that does to margin compression. And we're following that very closely.
Yeah, and those are some important differentiations that you mentioned about when people think about margin compression, they often think beef, poultry, the key elements within your food costs that are driving up, and they forget about some of those other supply elements and the impact that it can have on the overall margin of our restaurants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And even for a USB rancher, they sell a lot of parts of that cow to China, to foreign markets. Parts of the cow that we traditionally don't eat in the US, but if there are new market barriers and tariffs going on our exports, then that farmer is going to have less ability to fully maximize the cattle herds that they've been raising. So it's all cyclical.
Well, I don't think we can wrap things up today without also touching on labor, the other big issue on the financial statement and the pressure that we're feeling with labor shortages and staffing issues continues to be felt throughout the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, restaurants are in growth mode. We're at 15.7 million jobs across the industry. We're the second biggest private sector workforce in the country, and we're hiring. The problem is that there are so many job openings available in restaurants. There's not enough people seeking work to fill those. Our labor participation rate is around 62, 61%. That's below two-thirds. So the workforce participation rate is lagging behind. And we know we need to find people to work in restaurant jobs, earning money and maximizing the restaurant space. We were very pleased to see that the Essential Workers for Economic Advancement Act was introduced in a bipartisan fashion this month in September 2025. And what that does is it allows 65,000 temporary workers to come in from other countries, work up to a year, and earn money and pay taxes. And $65,000 is a foot in the door. It would grow over time, but we think that kind of temporary workforce visa program, expanding those workforce visa programs, is a really great place to start for the overall economic health of the country.
That's great to hear. So, as we wrap things up, is there one other thing or one element that restaurants can do right now to help you support them in their cause?
I would say there's so many things that are coming at small businesses, mid-sized businesses, restaurants in general. You really need partners. You need partnerships. You need to be engaged. In the four walls of the restaurant, no one knows that better than you. But outside of the restaurant, there are so many different forces that are changing. You need partners like your state restaurant association, who's taking those messages to your state house, where issues like taxes are decided, issues like food ingredient labeling are decided. And this is all live ammo. These are all things that are shifting going into next year. And having that engagement at your state restaurant association levels is so important for where you have locations. And then federal advocacy. I mean, these issues are very live. They're very personal for restaurant operators. And bringing those good personal anecdotal stories to DC it leaves an impression. It's one thing for me or the National Restaurant Association to lobby on Capitol Hill for something. They listen to us politely, but what actually changes minds and changes course corrections is when the restaurant operator comes from Des Moines, Iowa, and talks to someone representing Iowa and saying, "Oh, wow, this plays back home. I need to make sure that we're on the right side of this issue." March 10th, 11th, and 12th, we have our public affairs conference. Last year, we had almost 600 people on Capitol Hill working different offices, working their Senate offices, House leadership, Senate leadership. We need to continue that engagement because the stakes are only getting higher.
So those sound like a great opportunity to make it personal and to help identify that it's not just business, but it's personal for people too within this industry that we all know and love so much.
Absolutely. Well said.
Well, it's certainly a dynamic time right now, and I really appreciate you sitting down and walking through some of these elements with me. I think I'm still feeling pretty optimistic as we wrap up 2025 and start to head into 2026. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Meg, and thank you to the whole BDO team.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today as well. Please feel free to reach out to Aaron or myself with any questions or at any time. We'd love to hear from you. We invite you to subscribe to the BDO To Go podcast, and we'd love to have you join us on our next episode. Have a great day and enjoy a meal at a restaurant.
Thank you for for listening to BDO To Go. Past episodes and related insights are available at bdo.com/BDO To Go. Or you can go to iTunes or Spotify to rate, review, share, or subscribe to this podcast. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO. For more information on BDO's restaurant industry practice and the resources we provide, visit www.bdo.com/restaurants.